In November 1929, newspapers around Arkansas printed a story of a drifter named Connie Franklin, who had appeared in a remote community in Stone County, Arkansas in January of that year, but by March had disappeared. 8 months later, a grand jury indicted five men for the first-degree murder of Connie Franklin. But by the time the trial began that December, there would be questions as to whether or not there had even been a murder. This is the mystery of the Arkansas Ghost Trial. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight. And I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Life in the Ozark region of northern Arkansas was harder than life in most places across the country in early 1929. The Great Depression was coming, would begin with a market crash in October of 1929. But for the Ozarks, the Great Depression had been lingering for years. Long-term bad weather, resulting in low crop prices, had led the poverty rate to rise. Ozarkers were struggling, trying to make ends meet before the rest of the country felt the weight of the Great Depression. Drifters were common, and more men hit the road to try to find work. Men like Connie Franklin. Connie wandered into St. James, Arkansas, in the White River Hills in January 1929, rarely speaking about his life before he had arrived in town. All the locals knew was that he was 22 years old, always had his knapsack and his harmonica handy, and he was always willing to work hard, cutting railroad ties and firewood and working as a farmhand to make ends meet. Connie was a gifted musician who entertained folks in town with his harmonica and his ballads. Connie's musical talent intrigued a young woman named Tiller Rumener. The 16-year-old loved hearing Connie play, and despite the many other women Connie played for, the two grew very close, and they decided to marry. According to Tiller, on March 9, 1929, the two walked to the home of the local Justice of Peace, Finnis Ford, but he was gone for the day. So they agreed to try again the next day and began walking toward the Rumener family property along Cajun Creek. Just as they crossed the creek, things took a dark turn. Tiller saw five men approach, and soon the men were arguing with Connie. Tiller Rumener would later tell authorities that two of the men took her and raped her, and then forced her to watch as they beat Connie Franklin to death, and then covered their crime by burning his body in the woods. The men took Tiller to one of the assailants' cabins, where she was told that if she ever revealed what they had done, she would be the next one to die. When Connie Franklin didn't show up for work, wasn't seen around town playing his music, some people just assumed Connie had moved on. But there were people in town who suspected something just wasn't right. Why would a drifter who was accustomed to packing up belongings and moving on to the next town leave all of his possessions in his knapsack in the middle of town, the knapsack he always carried with him? Bertha Burns was one of those curious souls who found Tiller Rumener's silence on the matter and the circumstances of Connie Franklin's disappearance from town to be suspicious, which led Bertha to play detective. She went to Tiller Rumener, demanded to know what had happened to Connie Franklin. Bertha claimed that Tiller told her the whole story, even showed her where to find a bloodied hat in the woods, a hat that had belonged to Connie Franklin. Bertha went to the town sheriff, Sam Johnson, who seemed unimpressed with her evidence. It was hearsay, and the sheriff knew that Bertha Burns had her own issues with the gang of men she named as Connie Franklin's killers. Earlier in 1929, Bertha Burns had pressed charges against the men for beating her husband. This gang of men claimed to be vigilantes, doling out justice for something Bertha's husband had done, but the men were found guilty, and each man was made to pay a fine. The sheriff believed Bertha was trying to get revenge, make the men pay, by naming them as killers. But he did agree to look into it and take the case before a grand jury. Sheriff Johnson used Bertha Burns and Tiller Ruminer's statements as evidence in his very shoddy investigation. But by the time the grand jury convened, Tiller refused to testify, saying she was still afraid of what might happen to her if she did. The grand jury was dismissed, and the case was closed. Until the summer of 1929, when Bertha Burns was back on the case. She couldn't let it go. She pressed the sheriff to take another look at the case, and he agreed, questioning people around town, asking for any help folks could offer as to what had happened to Connie Franklin. Then came a break in the case. Bertha Burns asked Sheriff Johnson to accompany her to the woods near her home. Burns led the sheriff to a pile of ashes and charred bones. Bones she claimed to be the remains of Connie Franklin. She proceeded to explain to the sheriff that she had been afraid to mention one key detail in the months before, a detail he needed to know. Bertha claimed to hear a terrifying scream coming from this very area they were standing on the day Connie Franklin disappeared. Sheriff Johnson immediately questioned Tiller Ruminer, shared the new information he had obtained from Bertha, and promised to protect Tiller. She finally broke down, told Sheriff Johnson the whole gruesome story of Connie Franklin's murder and her attack. Another witness then came forward to the sheriff, a young deaf-mute cousin of Tiller Ruminer's, who wrote in a statement that he had seen five men carrying the lifeless body of Connie Franklin through the woods near Cajun Creek on the night Connie disappeared. Sheriff Johnson ordered the bones and the teeth that had been found in the woods to be sent to the state crime lab for examination. 8.5 months after Connie Franklin disappeared, on November 18, 1929, the grand jury issued indictments for first-degree murder. The men indicted were Alex Foulkes, Joe White, Herman Greenway, Hubert Hester, and Bill C. Younger. The brutal story of Connie Franklin's murder and indictment of his alleged killers caught the attention of newspaper editors across the country. The murder story made the front page of major newspapers across America late in 1929. Reporters from major U.S. cities were then sent to Mountain View, the county seat of Stone County, Arkansas, to cover the trial. They would report on the twists and turns this case would take, and every once in a while, they would include facts. Many of the reporters who descended on Stone County that year were what folks called yellow journalists. You could equate their stories to modern-day tabloids, just a bit of truth twisted with lies to draw you in and sell newspapers. Reporters printed stories that demeaned Stone County, demeaned that the county didn't have electricity, only had a few hotel rooms, and only had one telephone line that connected people to the outside world. The governor of Arkansas got so tired of the lies and the insults that he released a public denouncement of this kind of journalism, calling out the Kansas City Journal-Post, one of the most notorious offenders of this brand of reporting. Papers took the story of Connie Franklin's murder in Stone County and printed their assumptions and their stereotypes about Southerners, and in particular, Ozarkers. In this case, they set the stage for the story they wanted to tell. One of murder and one of folks living in the backwoods of Arkansas, with stereotypes of the Ozarks that had been perpetuated for years. A wild town full of moonshiners, illiterate hillbillies, and vigilantes. Now, those old newspapers did get one thing right. The Connie Franklin case and the trial that started on December 17, 1929, it was strange. Not because of the people involved, the people living in Stone County. It was strange because one of the key witnesses who took the stand and threw a wrench in the prosecution's case was Connie Franklin. You see, Connie showed up to testify during his own murder trial. When the Connie Franklin murder trial began in December of 1929, the legal teams pitted against each other made the story even more fascinating to outsiders. It was brother against brother. Hugh Williamson, the prosecuting attorney, arguing against his brother, Ben Williamson, the defense attorney. The defense explained to the jury that his clients had not seen Connie Franklin on the date he was said to have disappeared. The defense case rested on the theory that Connie Franklin willingly and for some unknown reason left Stone County on the day he was said to have been killed. The bones that had been discovered, those weren't from Connie Franklin because he was alive and his clients were innocent. The defense explained to the jury that the testimony of a man named Elmer Wingo would prove their case. Wingo had met with a deputy on December 3rd and told that deputy that Connie Franklin had spent the night at his home days after the murder was said to have been committed. Now, in early December, when this news broke, Elmer's story was printed in papers across Arkansas, right alongside a photo of Connie Franklin and a notice from the relatives of some of the accused. A notice offering a huge reward to anyone who could find and deliver Connie Franklin to Stone County. A few days later, December 7th of 1929, a traveling phonograph salesman, F.K. Marks, came forward. He said he had found the missing and murdered Connie Franklin on a farm in the Arkansas Delta. Now, at first, the man thought he had seen a ghost, but once he spoke to this farmhand, he said he knew it was Connie Franklin because he had seen his picture in the newspaper. The man begged Connie Franklin to travel back to the Ozarks, some 100 miles away, to set the record straight and free the five men who were standing trial for his murder. It took some time, but Connie Franklin agreed and returned to Stone County. You're likely asking all the same questions the folks in Stone County asked in 1929. People across America were asking these questions. Was this Connie Franklin? If so, why had he left St. James, and why on earth would Tiller Rumener say he had been murdered in a very gruesome fashion if the man was still alive? And if Tiller lied, had her cousin and Bertha Burns been in on the lie with her? Rumors, theories, gossip went wild. There was another possibility, a theory the prosecution believed, and so did a lot of folks in and around town. They theorized this man was posing as Connie Franklin, that he was a lookalike, either hired to fool the court and con families out of reward money, or hired by the families to help the accused get away with murder. Prosecutor Hugh Williamson demanded answers and help from the sheriff, saying that if this man was the real Connie Franklin, somebody had lied and somebody was going to jail. Sheriff Johnson arranged a lineup to test the man claiming to be Connie Franklin. He found a group of women who looked a lot like Tiller Rumener and directed Connie Franklin to pick out his sweetheart. He immediately walked up to one of the women and simply said, "Hello, Tiller." He had picked the right woman out of the lineup, but Tiller Rumener insisted that this wasn't her Connie. She was close to tears, denying him over and over again. Connie Franklin responded to Tiller by sharing intimate details about the relationship, things only the two of them could know, to prove he knew who she was. But Tiller Rumener stood by her story. This was not Connie Franklin. The judge ordered a grand jury to convene to establish the identity of the man who had come to town and claimed to be Connie Franklin. And as the investigation continued, the twist kept coming. Testimony would reveal there was never a Connie Franklin. When Connie Franklin arrived in St. James in January 1929, he had claimed to be 22 years old, which was only the first of many lies Connie Franklin had told. He wasn't 22, he was 33 years old. And his real name? It wasn't Connie Franklin. It was Marion Franklin Rogers. Most folks knew him as Frank Rogers. He had a wife and children. He had abandoned them all, and he had spent 3 months in the state mental hospital in 1926 until he escaped. Connie Franklin was never drifting to simply find work in the Ozarks. He was on the run, all of which had been confirmed through fingerprints and medical and dental records from the Arkansas State Hospital. The state health officer testified before the grand jury and revealed that the bone fragments and teeth that had been found in the woods and believed to be Connie Franklin were small samples that prevented him from determining if they were even human. A dentist testified that the teeth that had been found with the bones weren't human. They were dog or sheep teeth. Dr. J.E. Luther confirmed to the grand jury that through comparison of all available records, this was the same man who came to town as Connie Franklin. Legally, he was Marion Franklin Rogers, but no matter the name, Connie Franklin hadn't been murdered. He was alive. That big reveal is what led to Connie Franklin testifying at what's now gone down in history as the Arkansas Ghost Trial, a trial that may or may not have included a murder victim. As the murder trial in the case of Connie Franklin continued, the defense argued that enemies of the defendants had twisted the story of Connie Franklin leaving town so they could frame all five men for a crime they didn't commit. The day Tiller Ruminer was to testify in the case, there was a line at the door, people waiting to get in to hear what Tiller Ruminer had to say. When she took the stand, Tiller maintained her story that she didn't know the man who had come back to town claiming to be Connie Franklin. She did concede that she had not witnessed Connie Franklin being killed or burned, but she said the rest of her story was true. The defense pushed Tiller, asking her if she had made up the whole story to exact revenge. The defense revealed to the jury that on the very day Connie Franklin disappeared, vigilantes, including Bill C. Younger, who was on trial for murder, raided the cabin of the Ruminer family and accused Tiller's father of stealing from them. The men beat Tiller's father, kidnapped her brother, and forced her brother to work as a farmhand to work off his father's debt. Tiller insisted that her brother had been kidnapped to make sure she kept quiet about the attack and murder of Connie Franklin. But the defense claimed it was all lies, an attempt to exact revenge on behalf of her family. The next person to take the stand was Connie Franklin, technically Frank Rogers. He testified that on the day in question, the day he disappeared, he and three of his accused murderers started drinking together, and they kept drinking until they were all very, very drunk. They then headed to the home of the Justice of the Peace to get the marriage license he and Ruminer were hoping to obtain that day. But as Frank Rogers told it, he fell off his mule, injured himself, and that kept him from finishing the trip to the Justice of the Peace. Remember the bloody hat Bertha Burns found? Frank Rogers said that when he fell, he hit his head, which is why that hat was covered in blood. The day after he had allegedly been murdered, Frank Rogers claimed that Tiller had broken the news to him that she wanted to postpone the wedding until that fall. He gave her an ultimatum: marry him that day or he was leaving town and wouldn't come back. Tiller refused, so the man known as Connie Franklin left town and said he never looked back until he heard he had been murdered. Defense attorney Ben Williamson wrapped up his questions for Rogers by asking, "You weren't beaten to death and burned in March, were you?" To which Frank Rogers, aka Connie Franklin, replied, "Well, I don't look like it and I don't feel like it." By the time this case was in the hands of the jury, you can only imagine that they were exhausted and confused by all the back and forth and the very question of whether or not Connie Franklin had been murdered. Initially, the jury was deadlocked, but the judge, S.M. Bone, explained to the jury that the trial had already cost Stone County more than $8,000. The county was struggling, couldn't afford another trial, and they were bearing the burden of this one. He needed the jury to go back and do their best to come back with a verdict. and the jury did as they were asked. The next day, a verdict was read in court. Not guilty. All of the defendants were acquitted on the murder charge, but the judge did hold Herman Greenway and Hubert Hester under $2,500 bail on the charge of rape. 1 year later, the charges against both men were dropped with no explanation. Now, as weeks and months passed, there was a rumor that circled Stone County that could explain why, generations later, this case isn't well known, even in the state of Arkansas. Folks said that Judge Bone was so frustrated about that trial and the way the whole thing had embarrassed the county that he ordered all the records of the trial destroyed, supposedly in an effort to end the gossip once and for all. The judge may have ordered those records destroyed, but no man can destroy human curiosity and the need to get to the truth. But the truth in the case of Connie Franklin seems to lie somewhere between Tiller Rumener and Connie Franklin's explanations of what happened in March of 1929. Overwhelming evidence has led to the belief that Connie Franklin, who was really Frank Rogers, was indeed attacked on the day he disappeared in 1929, possibly as payback for some wrong his attackers wanted to avenge, or as a clear message that he was not to marry Tiller Rumener. As the trial unfolded, it had been revealed that people felt Connie Franklin was dangerous, unstable, and as some folks said, not right in the head. So the theory goes that within this small community, a group of men scared Connie Franklin away from Tiller and pushed him to run away from town. Frank Rogers may have come back once he heard he had been murdered, but not to testify that he was Connie Franklin to set five men free who had beaten him. It's possible he returned to try to win back his sweetheart, Tiller Rumener. If that was part of his motivation, it didn't work. Tiller Rumener married another man and remained in the community to raise a family. Frank Rogers returned to his wandering life after the trial, did the occasional radio interview to talk about the day he testified at his own murder trial. But his days were numbered. Just 3 years after the trial ended, in December of 1932, a man found an unconscious Frank Rogers along a road in the Arkansas Delta. A few days later, Frank Rogers died. And rumors spread that his lies had finally caught up to him and he had been murdered again. But there was nothing sensational about the end of Frank Rogers. He died due to a combination of exposure and appendicitis. An Arkansas music teacher named W.T. Kendrick, he wrote a couple of ballads inspired by Connie Franklin, but one in particular is called Marion Franklin Rogers. W.T. Kendrick wrote, "For now it's Connie Franklin, I'll leave the Rogers out. He purchased him a harp just to play to entertain, played Turkey in a Straw and good old Liza Jane. He rambled and he played for 4 long years or more, while his wife struggled hard to keep the wolf from the door." It should be remembered that before the Arkansas ghost trial, there was a wife and children abandoned by Frank Rogers, who then decided to become Connie Franklin. Decades later, in the mid-1970s, an old man claiming to be Connie Franklin returned to Stone County, Arkansas. He walked the streets of Mountain View, put on quite a show playing his harmonica all around town, a town that more than likely would prefer Connie Franklin go away, stay away. Some ghosts linger in silence, but it seems the ghost of the Ozarks decided to forever linger in song. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. I'd love to know your theories about Connie Franklin. Do you believe he was really murdered in 1929 or not? Visit southernmysteries.com, where you can send me an email and let me know what you think, or tweet me. I'm at Mysteries Pod. If you want to do a deep dive and read much more about the life of Connie Franklin or Frank Rogers, historian Brooks Blevins spent time researching the case. He grew up near Mountain View, but didn't hear about the Connie Franklin trial until he was an adult. His book, Ghost of the Ozarks, Murder and Memory in the Upland South, is a must read. You can find a link to the book in the show notes for this episode at southernmysteries.com. And while you're there, make sure you subscribe to the show and catch up on previous episodes. And if you'd recommend Southern Mysteries, I'd like to ask you a favor. Share this episode on your social accounts to let people know that they should try it out. I'd appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening.